sporočil bi bilo v tem primeru več. Načela demokracije je to zagotovo dokaz. Skratka, to je za nas slabo.
You have called before you 13 members of this parliament to face disciplinary action.
Et ne faites pas une histoire d'État parce qu'il y a 50 débiles mentaux.
Z nami govori evropska poslanka iz Slovenije, Ljudmila Novak.
A los valores que compartimos todos los europeos.
When we became members in 1995, we were told that vodka will have a tight definition, just like rum, just like whiskey.
Io ho detto con ironia.
Oddaje EP interaktivno podpira Evropski parlament. Projekt poteka pod vodstvom Radija Študent. Pro et contra. Euroskepticizem na Češkem in Hrvaškem. S 1. decembrom je v veljavo stopila Lizbonska pogodba. Evropski pravni dokument, ki je nasledil nikoli sprejeto in osovraženo ustavno pogodbo, je na svoji poti implementacije po evropskih državah doživljal različno usodo. Po prvotnem načrtu bi morala biti pogodba uveljavljena že januarja letos, a je zaradi prvega irskega ne na uveljavitev morala počakati slabo leto. Zaplet pa je po potrditvi Lizbonske pogodbe na Irskem nastal na Češkem. Zakaj je češki predsednik Václav Klaus, oster euroskeptik, zavlačeval s podpisom evropske pogodbe?
Že pred referendumom o vstopu v Unijo je češki predsednik Václav Klaus državljane pozival proti članstvu v evropski skupnosti. Nevarnost izgube suverenega odločanja je bil največji in stalni očitek, ki ga je že takrat naslavljal na Evropsko unijo. Na to je leta 2005 pozval k razpustitvi unije in povratku k njenim začetkom oziroma k oblikovanju prostega trgovinskega območja, ki bi se imenovalo Organizacija evropskih držav. Zato tudi ni presenetljiva javna podpora nasprotnikom Lizbonske pogodbe. Klaus je pred odprtjem domače fronte proti pogodbi nedvomno veliko upov polagal na prvi irski referendum. Ko je postalo jasno, da bodo Irci izpeljali še enega, je skupina 17 senatorjev tudi na Češkem zaostrila spopad z ratifikacijo Lizbonske pogodbe.
Vodja britanskih konzervativcev David Cameron je omenjal možnost referenduma tudi v Veliki Britaniji, a je od namere po nekaj dneh odstopil. Lizbonski pogodbi pa je kratkotrajno in nevsebinsko nasprotoval tudi poljski predsednik Lech Kaczynski. Kljub vsem obljubam o nasprotovanju pogodbi, ki so prihajale na Klausov naslov, je bil češki predsednik kot edini glasni euroskeptik pogodbo na koncu prisiljen podpisati. Domača javnost in politične stranke, razen nekaj članov senata, ga že od začetka pri njegovem prizadevanju niso podpirale.
Sedaj pa prisluhnimo pogovoru z irskim novinarjem Tomom Cliffordom, ki je zaposlen v Pragi pri tamkajšnjem časopisu Prague Post. Clifford nam je na začetku predstavil nasprotovanje češkega predsednika Klausa aktualnemu projektu centralizacije Evropske unije.
Now, President Václav Klaus is skeptical about the whole European Union project. He says specifically that the European Union is a large block of nations, some of them very powerful, and that these powerful nations, he's talking about Britain, France, Germany, Italy, will ride roughshod over the interests of smaller nations like the Czech Republic. And therefore the sovereignty of the Czech Republic is threatened by continued political integration by the EU.
Okay, if I jump at the end, is this election of Van Rompuy as the new president of the European Commission, what was Klaus's position, or should I say opinion, on the way Van Rompuy was elected? Is this a part of his fears of European Union and delegations from bigger countries?
Yes, well, I mean, it wasn't just Václav Klaus. I think there's great disquiet among many people in the European Union about how the president, if you like, of Europe is selected. Now, note I use the word selected, not elected. The president of the EU was chosen by a group of 27, and, you know, there are problems with the EU. That Klaus is only one of the people who would raise this, but there are problems. There's a deficit of democracy in the EU, and a lot of people in the EU would question just why the EU should be led by a man who was selected by an elite group of 27. But getting on to the exact sort of position of the president of the European Union, we don't know how powerful that's going to be, whether this is going to be a figurehead or not. Now, Henry Kissinger once said, if there's a crisis, who do I ring in Europe? Do I ring the British Prime Minister? Do I ring the German president? Do I ring the French president? Who speaks for Europe? Now, will the new president of the EU speak for Europe? Doubtful, to be quite honest with you, because he would have to, at the very least, hold negotiations to come up with a common policy with all the leaders of the EU. So whenever that phone call comes, or if ever that phone call comes from Washington at 3 o'clock in the morning, I don't think it'll be to the president of the EU.
Which particular opt-out did Václav Klaus want?
There was number two. The social policy opt-out, but there's one particular opt-out of the Czech Republic. There's one issue, if you like, the Czech Republic has, and that's a thing called the Beneš decrees. Now, at the end of the Second World War, a number of properties and businesses belonging to German citizens in then Czechoslovakia were taken over by the state on the basis that these German cities were sympathetic towards the Nazis. Now, not every German house or every German business was taken over. There were many Germans here who sided with the Czechoslovaks during the Second World War. But generally speaking, many, many properties were taken over by the Czechoslovak state at the end of the war, and these laws were signed by the then Czechoslovak president, a man called Eduard Beneš, and they became known as the Beneš decrees. Now, Klaus tried to wave the red flag that in a politically unified Europe that the Beneš decrees would be seen as illegal, and that the now Czech state would have to give reparations or recompense the Germans for properties that were confiscated. That was never on the cards. That was never going to happen. That was a red flag flown by Klaus, because the Lisbon Treaty is not retroactive. It can't go back into the 40s and 50s and undo what was then done. But it did raise a number of points. Klaus was able to tap into a fear among the Czech people at large that the Lisbon Treaty was not in their best interest. Now, it's important to note the Lisbon Treaty was ratified by Parliament here, and that the majority of Czechs were basically in favor of a Lisbon Treaty if it made Europe work more efficiently and if it boosted the European economy. But there are concerns here about the political costs of the Lisbon Treaty.
So if I understand correctly, Klaus used more populistic arguments against the Lisbon Treaty.
Yes.
But what about on the other side, argumentative discussion on the Lisbon Treaty? Was this represented to the Czech people, or was the treaty just signed in the parliament? I mean, how did the...
Well, now, for instance, I come from Ireland. We had two votes on the Lisbon Treaty. The first one we rejected, the second one, of course, we passed. There was a debate in the Czech Republic about the Lisbon Treaty, and there was a very, very forthright debate in the Czech Parliament about the Lisbon Treaty. But generally speaking, the Czechs were in favor of Lisbon, and they were in favor of a more efficient Europe. But they did have concerns over some issues, but primarily these issues could be encapsulated by saying, will the interests of the smaller nations be protected by the Lisbon Treaty? Or will Europe, because the Lisbon Treaty brings in a majority voting into the EU for the first time. So if you've got, if you're a small nation, and you're outvoted by the Lisbon Treaty protocols, if you like, or by the scenario the Lisbon Treaty brings in majority voting, how do you protect your national sovereignty? For instance, let me just take one issue. Maybe at some future date, the EU will send an army, or call it what you will, to Afghanistan. Well, supposing the Czech Republic said no, even though the Czech Republic presently have troops in Afghanistan, just suppose the Czech Republic said, no, we don't want to send any soldiers to Afghanistan. It is issues like this. How far will majority voting go, and what guarantees, if any, in the Lisbon Treaty are there for smaller nations to opt out? Now, there are very few guarantees to opt out of most of the policy clauses in the Lisbon Treaty for smaller nations. And that is, it was one fear the Czech people had, and one fear many people from smaller nations, and also larger nations like Britain, for instance. I mean, don't forget, if Britain had voted on Lisbon, it would have been defeated. So there are genuine concerns over Lisbon, but there was a debate in the Czech Republic, and the people, by and large, agreed to Lisbon, even though with some reservations.
As you said, there are doubts on the Lisbon Treaty, but only in few countries, especially in small countries. If I set an example, is Slovenia. We didn't have such a debate. Why did Václav Klaus play this role as a skeptic?
Yeah, good question. Well, number one, you see, I don't think he thought that his bluff would be called so quickly. Now, this was the Klaus scenario. The Irish having rejected Lisbon last year, he didn't initially think that the Irish would then back it, would then support it. And he thought, even if the Irish did support it, he thought maybe by that time there might be a Conservative government in Britain. Now, the Conservatives had promised, they've since gone back on this, but the Conservatives had promised to hold a referendum on Lisbon in Britain if they got into power. So Klaus was, I think, hoping for the Irish or the British to sort of come in and save his bacon. Now, that didn't happen. The Irish voted in the end for Lisbon. There hasn't been an election called in Britain yet. And even when the next election is called in Britain, which has got to be called by, I think, next June, and even if the Tories win or the Conservatives win, the Conservatives have now said, well, we're not going to hold a referendum on Lisbon. So it came to the point in November when Klaus was sort of outmaneuvered, if you like. The Irish had backed it. The British weren't going to hold a referendum. The Constitutional Court in the Czech Republic, meeting in the second Czech city of Brno, said there's nothing in this Lisbon Treaty that impinges upon the sovereignty of the Czech Republic. And Klaus was just completely outmaneuvered. He was out on a limb. But when he initially started this, he thought he'd have greater support from the British and Irish.
I believe that also a few political, not parties, more members of politics were also against, especially some members of Senate. Klaus had also political support.
He had some political support, but he didn't have much. See, it's important to remember that Lisbon was ratified by the lower house of the Czech parliament. The representatives of the people had given it the okay, had given it the green light, had voted to approve it. So Klaus did have some political support, but it wasn't much, and it wasn't in any way near a majority that the pro-Lisbon Treaty had in the parliament. And this was one of the great issues in Czech politics of recent times. How long could the president keep on defying parliament? Because parliament had voted in favor of Lisbon. So whilst there was some political support for Klaus, it wasn't that much.
Is it possible that Klaus is one of the rare that doubts in this EU Lisbon Treaty project? One of rare voices that raises questions that are not raised enough throughout Europe?
Now, I think this was the great opportunity, I think, that Klaus lost. I think he could have been. I think he could have been one of the great sort of European statesmen to come up and say, listen, I'm against this because of certain things. But the ground he chose to fight on was very, very dodgy. The Benes decrees, as I said, as I mentioned before, were not really covered by the Lisbon Treaty, and they weren't going to be sort of thrown out by the Lisbon Treaty. If Klaus had said, look, why not have a European-wide vote on the Lisbon Treaty? Why not have every nation in Europe allow its people to vote? Then I think he'd have had some support. And I've read the Lisbon Treaty. The Lisbon Treaty is a very vague document. There are clauses in the Lisbon Treaty which literally say, you know, to be decided later, to be decided later. So there was great concern in Europe over there was some support in Europe for those who said, look, Lisbon has to be more democratic. For Europe to decide on such a policy document as the Lisbon Treaty, surely all members and all citizens of European Union nations should vote. Now, if Klaus had come out and said that, I think he'd have got far greater support. As it was, he kept his opposition to it very, very parochial, if you like, on the Benes decrees and on the Czech opt-out clauses. But also remember this, that even in the Czech Republic, Klaus was not speaking for the Czech people. He's not allowed to speak for the Czech people by the constitution. He's the figurehead. The prime minister, it's a parliamentary democracy in the Czech Republic, the prime minister speaks for the people. The president endorses whatever parliament decides, whatever parliament votes upon, the president signs. Now, Klaus realized his game was up. Once Britain and Ireland said, you know, we're going to approve Lisbon, once the Irish did and the British Conservatives said they were going to, Klaus didn't have a leg to stand on. That's why he signed it very, very quickly, within hours of the Constitutional Court in Brno saying that the Lisbon Treaty did not impinge on Czech sovereignty. Klaus signed it. He had very little political support, but he could have played a better political game across Europe.
One of Klaus's staff members suggested that Czech Republic should leave Europe. Was this a serious proposition?
What the Czech Republic could leave the European Union?
Yes.
That's not going to happen. That's absolutely, totally impossible. First of all, there's great support here for the European Union. The Czech Republic has done pretty well economically. It's going through tough times like every nation is now. But you see, you get back to this parliamentary democracy. Parliament will decide, not the president or not one of his aides. So an aide to the president can say whatever he wants. It's of no constitutional significance. And there is no chance whatsoever of the Czech Republic leaving the European Union.
Went to a party. I danced all night. I drank 16 beers and started up a fight. But no one cheated. You're out of luck. I'm rolling down the stairs, too drunk to fuck. Too drunk to fuck. Too drunk to fuck. Your gun shooting out cop tires sounds like loads and loads of fun. But in my room, wish you were dead. You ball like a baby in a razor head. Too drunk to fuck. Too drunk to fuck. Too drunk to fuck. Too drunk, too drunk, too drunk, too drunk. Too drunk to fuck. Too drunk, too fuck. And too drunk, too drunk. Thank you.
Vous buzez.
Tom Clifford je odprl nekaj zanimivih tem. Kot pravi sam, je bila diskusija, ki jo je sprožil češki predsednik, usmerjena na napačna področja. O neuspešnih prizadevanjih Klausa, tako na domačem kot tujem, smo spregovorili tudi s profesorjem Petrom Kanjokom z Masarykove univerze v Brnu, čigar delo se vrti okoli euroskepticizma. Kanjok ne deli mnenja s Cliffordom o neargumentirani debati na češkem, saj kot pravi sam...
The Constitutional Court discussed the question, and when the battle was was over and when the battle was decided, then both media and politicians changed their interest. So, if we can find some effect on the public debate, we have to say that this effect was short-lasting. And the reason is that European integration is not a real matter in the Czech politics. So the discussion was very short and with no real conclusion, I think.
Okay, if you compare the Klaus's skepticism with, I don't know, Irish referendum, can you draw any comparisons with argumentations between Klaus's skepticism and the story that was going on in Ireland?
Well, I think that it's very difficult to find similarities between approaches of Czech president and reasons why Dublin voted down the Lisbon Treaty in July 2007 or something like this. The approaches of Czech presidents has something to do with European integration and the position of Václav Klaus is long-lasting. But when we look at the Ireland, we must say that the reason why the voters voted down the Lisbon Treaty were more national and were more, from my point of view, social or historical, and have much to do, for example, with the role of religion in the society. And if we want to find some similarities, then we can look, for example, at the British Conservatives, because their argumentation is quite similar to the reasons and to the argumentation of a Czech president.
Can we say that the issue that President Klaus put into the public was a missed opportunity of a more elaborate discussion around the role of the European Union and the Lisbon Treaty?
Well, I think that the very important thing is who pick up the question. And from my point of view, the Czech president has quite limited ability to lead and to open some real discussion. Because when we look at the politician in the European Union and in the most important Western countries, then we will find that nobody listened to him. So that's the reason why he just he just said what he wanted to say. But I think that he didn't mention to lead some serious and long-lasting discussion on the issues.
What is the general opinion of the Czech people towards the European Union and especially on the Lisbon Treaty itself?
So I think that the Czech voters are satisfied with being a member in the European Union. And when we want to talk about the Lisbon Treaty, and the Czech voters, so they do not matter. So the Lisbon Treaty is not a question in the political discussion and in the public debate.
Was there a discussion about a referendum, sort of as in Ireland?
No.
V resnici pa je bila češka zgodba podpisovanja Lizbonske pogodbe končana že konec leta 2008. 26. novembra je češko ustavno sodišče prvič presodilo, da je Lizbonska pogodba v skladu s češko ustavo in da parlament pogodbo lahko ratificira. Da velike opozicije pogodbi ni bilo, dokazujeta glasovanje v parlamentu, kjer je 19. februarja 125 poslancev glasovalo za ratifikacijo, 61 pa proti, ter glasovanje v senatu 6. maja, ko je s podobno razliko 54 senatorjev glasovalo za, 20 pa proti ratifikaciji Lizbonske pogodbe. Kako lahko potem ocenimo Klausovo polletno soliranje?
Za konec zgodbe o češkem podpisovanju Lizbonske pogodbe smo preverili še, če je bilo Klausovo sklicevanje na Beneševe dekrete, ki je rezultiralo v izuzetju Češke iz listine o temeljnih pravicah, upravičeno. O Beneševih dekretih in dveh odločanjih Češkega ustavnega sodišča smo se pogovarjali s profesorjem Hubertom Smekalom, specialistom za ustavna vprašanja, ki prihaja z iste univerze kot naš prejšnji sogovornik.
Is between the first and the second constitutional question of that were put to the Constitutional Court in Czech Republic.
Okay, so both these questions were put to Constitutional Court by senators, especially from the Civic Democratic Party, and the first one was dealing especially with the more general questions of sovereignty, if the Czech Republic is losing sovereignty to the European Union, and also one of the most important issues was the issue of so-called competence. So who has the competence to decide on competences, which was not thought that it remains in the Czech Republic, but it was feared that it was moved to Brussels or to Luxembourg, to the ECJ. The second judgment of the Constitutional Court was dealing with the remaining questions, and some of those questions were more technical on, for example, equity of equity of number of members in the European Parliament, that bigger states have more deputies than smaller states, and so on. So the second judgment was dealing with the remaining questions which were not answered in the first judgment and which were not asked by the senators in the first judgment.
Some commentators said that parts of Lisbon Treaty are vague, that there are a lot of things that will be decided later. Is this true?
Well, it is true because some vagueness is typical for international treaties. Well, the international treaties are more vague than national statutes usually are. So the second Lisbon judgment is dealing also with this vagueness and is explaining why it is the case. Well, it's the international treaty. It cannot describe and it cannot deal with everything. So that's the reason for vagueness.
Was Václav Klaus's fear that it would abolish Benes' decrees real, or does the Lisbon Treaty does not have this retroactive effect?
Well, I'm not sure if his fear was real, or if his fear was the reason for the Czech opt-out from the EU Charter. Majority of constitutional lawyers, including myself, say that the Lisbon Treaty, or Lisbon Treaty with EU Charter in effect,
Klausovo nasprotovanje Lizbonski pogodbi je bilo bolj kot ne iracionalnega značaja. Če pa dodamo še podatek, da Klaus na podoben način nasprotuje tudi antropogeno povzročenemu globalnemu segrevanju, kjer se njegovo mnenje naslanja na nekritične prispevke angleškega režiserja Martina Durkina, lahko ugotovimo, da želeni učinek ni bil dosežen. Klaus je sicer sprožil vprašanje o smiselnosti pogodbe, a je bila večina njegovih argumentov proti Lizbonski pogodbi nedodelanih in osnovanih na populističnih mnenjih.
Klaus je, kot že rečeno, v sklepni fazi svoj podpis Lizbonske pogodbe pogojeval s češkim izuzetjem iz listine o temeljnih pravicah in pri tem uspel. Ali evropsko popuščanje Klausu prinaša nevaren vzorec, po katerem bi se podobnega izsiljevanja pri kakšnem od drugih skupnih vprašanj lotila katera od preostalih članic Unije, smo vprašali Milana Brgleza, poznavalca mednarodnih odnosov in profesorja z Ljubljanske fakultete za družbene vede.
Ja, vedno je nevarno bistvo to izsiljevanje. Ne? In to, ko se enkrat dopusti nekomu tako imenovani opting out, potem je to možno tudi seveda za druge, oziroma se lahko to vrstne, bom rekel, zahteve množijo. Vsekakor v takšni uniji, ko zdaj že združuje 27 držav, je teh možnosti če dalje več. In mislim, da bomo kmalo prišli saj na nekaterih področjih do situacije, ko bomo res govorili o fleksibilni geometriji Evropske unije. Nekatere bodo dejansko prevzele te enotne standarde, druge bodo pa ostale na margini. Vprašanje je samo, za katere politike gre.
Češki predsednik Václav Klaus pa ni osamljeni jezdec na valovih evroskepticizma, ki se tu in tam pojavljajo v vse številnejših državah članicah. Nekaj primerov smo že omenili, Milana Brgleza pa smo vprašali, kakšni so vzroki, ki porodijo skepso do Evropske unije ali, za zadnje primere bolj specifično, do Lizbonske pogodbe.
Nek vidika pravzaprav postavljeni, ne? Eno je to, da seveda Evropska unija pridobiva vse več tudi politične moči, tako simbolno kot realno. To je prva taka zadeva, kar moti nekatere politike, torej v bistvu nekako se izgubljajo tisti nacionalni interesi oziroma tisto nacionalno, na kar se običajno evroskepticizem naslanja, torej v bistvu na nacionalni sentiment. Druga reč, ki pa je mogoče malo bolj zaskrbljujoča, je pa tudi to, da jih je motlo tisto, kar pa naj bi bilo nekaj skupnega v Evropi. In to je recimo področje človekovih pravic, kjer se je skušali izključevati tisti del človekovih pravic, za katerega je pa Evropska unija oziroma te institucije zaradi načina ali pa tudi zaradi funkcij, ki jih imajo pri delovanju skupnega trga, bila pozorna, in to so zlasti socialne.
Skepso do Evropske unije pa kar znotraj Evropskega parlamenta goji tudi skupina poslancev Evropa svobode in demokracije. Brgleza smo vprašali, kakšno vlogo lahko odigra 32-erica evroskeptičnih evroposlancev in kako gleda na tovrstne pomisleke od znotraj.
Kontradiktor ne sodeluje znotraj evropskih institucij, ne? Ampak mislim, da na splošno evroskepticizem, tako kot vsaka druga zadeva, ki je malo skeptična, ni napačna. Vendar je zdaj vprašanje, ali je zdaj povsem razumno čisto na vsakem področju to zadevo uveljavljati. Oziroma, tako bom rekel, malo dvoma v to vrstne projekte je dober med. Tudi zaradi tega, ker ti projekti običajno ne pomenijo nujno projekte ljudi, ampak predvsem elit in še zlasti kapitala. In toliko je to zadevo dobro pogledati malo z distance. Vendar pa je res, da pa ne verjamem, da bi do rešitve teh vprašanj znotraj Evrope prišlo, če bi nas vodili evropski.
Ob pomislekih zoper Evropsko unijo in njen ustroj, ki se sporadično pojavljajo po različnih državah članicah, se poraja vprašanje njihove vsebinske sorodnosti. Nosi evroskepticizem češkega predsednika Václava Klausa drugačna prizadevanja kot pomisleki njegovega poljskega kolega Leha Kaczynskega? Je nezaupanje Ircev do Unije pred časom drugačno od tistega, ki navdaja britanske konzervativce? Milan Brgles.
So neke razlike, čeprav neke skupne zadeve pa tudi. Ne. Tisto osnovno, kar običajno evroskeptike skrbi, da se moč, ki jo imajo znotraj držav, pravzaprav se v evropskem okviru izgublja, obstajajo neki zunanji standardi in s tem tudi prisila za to, da se vsi ravnamo po istih pravilih. To je en del, ki jih 100% skrbi.
Europa, neurotisch. Europa, neurotisch. Du bist vom Psychosen fasziniert. Du liebst das Parfüm deiner Neurosen. Multiple Persönlichkeiten und komplexe in vielen Facetten.
Wir sprechen von Obsessionen, Perversionen, Halluzinationen. Europa,
neurotisch.
Europa.
Du hast unkontrollierte Emotionen
und manische Depressionen,
Xenophobie, Pädophilie, Melancholie, Lethargie, Egomanie, Erotomanie, Klaustrophobie, Kleptomanie, Schizophrenie, Pyromanie, Bigotterie, Nymphomanie.
Du liebst Autos, Autodestruktion und bist narzisstisch, eurozentristisch.
Wir sprechen von Depressionen, Regressionen, Halluzinationen.
Do Evropske unije pa se ne pojavlja samo v državah 27-erice, pač pa tudi v verjetnih bodočih članicah zveze. Če se ozremo samo v nam najbližjo okolico, se večinsko proevropski politiki ubadajo s precej nizko podporo članstvu v uniji, tako v Srbiji kot na Hrvaškem.
Na Hrvaškem različne javnomnenjske raziskave že kar nekaj časa merijo zgolj okoli 30-odstotno podporo vstopu v evropski kvazi raj. Nad evropsko neambicioznostjo svojega naroda pa je pred časom javno potarnal tudi predsednik države Stjepan Mesić.
O nizki podpori članstvu v EU smo se pogovarjali s hrvaškim politologom Brankom Caratanom z Zagrebške politološke fakultete. Caratan je najprej predstavil vzroke za euroskepticizem v hrvaški javnosti.
Mislim, da so to prije svega reakcije ne na odnos evropske, ne na ulogu Evropske unije u hrvatskoj politici, nego na neke vanjske poteze. Potpora je uvijek padala onda kada je bilo nekih zahtjeva oko suđenja u Hagu ili na primjer kada je hrvatska javnost procjenjivala da Brisel ne stoji iza Hrvatske uzme u ovom sporu sa Slovenijom. Dakle, to su reakcije koje osciliraju i mislim da nisu suviše dramatične. Naime, kada se neka pitanja riješe, kada pregovori sa Briselom dobiju zamah ili kada se smiri tenzija sa Slovenijom, ja očekujem da će tada podrška za ulazak Hrvatske u Europsku uniju ponovno porasti.
Hrvaški politolog pa ob tem vidi tudi težavo v slabi informiranosti Hrvatov o Evropski uniji in drugih eksistencialnih težavah, s katerimi se v tem času ubadajo na Hrvaškem.
Dakle, mogli bi reći isto tako da je dobar dio populacije nije ni dobro informiran o prednostima i problemima koje donosi ulazak u uniju. Ali to će vjerovatno biti rješeno onda kada ova druga pitanja budu potisnuta. Posebno ovo ekonomsko pitanje koje je veoma teško. Broj nezaposlenih se neprekidno povećava. Tvornice koje prijeti zatvaranje povećavaju tu dramu. Sindikati su aktivirani. Tako da ova tema Unije zbog svih tih razloga danas nije u prvom planu i ne može se očekivati neka zdušna podrška Uniji onda kada su neka vitalna pitanja, neka vitalni interesi stanovništva ugroženi.
Pristopna pogajanja za vstop u Evropsku uniju so dolga, administrativno ostra in polna ultimatov. Je tudi dolgotrajen in naporen proces razlog upada evropske uneme na Hrvaškem?
Svakako i u tome, jer jedan dio konzervativne javnosti to shvaća kao neravnopravni odnos. Ono, imali smo vlast drugih, Beča, Budimpešte, Beograda i sada dolazi opet još jedan sa Brisel, jeli? Međutim, ima tu još naravno i neke stvari koje su zajedničke bile za sve buduće članice Evropske unije. Kako se prijem približava, tako se neki zahtjevi konkretiziraju i onda pojedini segmenti društva počinju sumnjati da li će im Evropska unija donijeti benefite ili gubitke.
Številne reforme, ki jih od Hrvaške zahteva Evropska unija, precej spreminjajo današnji ustroj vsakdanjika na Hrvaškem. Privatizacija, sodelovanje s Haškim tribunalom in večji pravni red, vse to so stvari, zaradi katerih prebivalstvo na Hrvaškem pomišlja, ali je Evropska unija res želena prihodnost, se strinja Branko Caratan, ki pa kljub temu ni črnogled.
Dakle, tu ima nekoliko mogućih tema. Jedna od tih tema je naravno da oni koji su se obogatili poluilegalno u privatizaciji boje se nametanja pravnog poretka na čemu će inzistirati i Brisel u pristupnim pregovorima. Tu postoje naravno i neki drugi slični slične skupine koje zaziru od Europske unije, ali mislim da to sve skupa nije bitno.
Težke gospodarske razmere, ki narekujejo splošno nezainteresiranost za Evropsko unijo, pa na Hrvaškem s pridom izkoriščajo konzervativne, nacionalistične in protievropske politične sile.
Ljudi danas uglavnom ne vide prednosti koje Unija donosi, a jedan dio nacionalističke javnosti svjesno podržava tu podozrivost prema ulasku u Uniju pod geslom gubitka suvereniteta.
Če v javnosti vlada precejšen euroskepticizem, pa je situacija med politično in intelektualno elito na Hrvaškem ravno nasprotna. Politolog Branko Caratan nam je predstavil politično enotnost pri južnih sosedih, ko gre za vstop v Evropsko unijo.
Sve iole veće parlamentarne stranke su za ulazak u Uniju i to će se vidjeti prilikom glasanja u Saboru o sporazumu o arbitraži. Dakle, samo će neke marginalne kao ona slavonska Glavaševa stranka biti vjerovatno protiv. Intelektualni dio Hrvatske je nesumnjivo za ulazak u Uniju i tu postoje sad samo oni igrači koji igraju na nacionalne osjećaje i koji pokušavaju još posljednji puta naplatiti tu temu da bi se održali na političkoj sceni.
O vstopu Hrvaške u Evropsku uniju bo na koncu odlučao Sabor. Kljub temu pa bo njegova odločitev precej majava, če za njo ne bo imel podpore javnosti. Na kakšen način jo namerava pridobiti, potem ko je jasno, da mu trenutno ne gre najbolje?
Verujem da će uslijediti jedna akcija objašnjavanja prednosti ulaska u Uniju. Značajna je činjenica da skoro svi iole važni mediji u Hrvatskoj podržavaju bez rezervi ulazak Hrvatske u Uniju. Tako da će to na kraju ipak biti, taj euroskepticizam će na kraju ipak biti prevladan.
Nizka podpora med voljivci je, poleg odprtih pristopnih poglavij, največja hrvaška težava na poti v Evropsko unijo. Zagrebški akademik je kljub temu optimističen. Ko bo čas, bo tudi hrvaška javnost Evropski zvezi rekla ja.
Onoga momenta kada se riješe neka druga pitanja koja su zapravo u odnosu na ulazak u Evropsku uniju manje težine, opet napominjem ovaj konflikt sa Slovenijom oko granica, tada će povjerenje porasti.
Nič kaj zaskrbljujoča se nizka podpora članstvu v Evropski uniji v javnosti nekaterih verjetnih bodočih članic EU ne zdi tudi domačemu strokovnjaku za mednarodne odnose Milanu Brglezu, s katerim zaključujemo oddajo. Brglez vidi težave, ko gre za vstopanje novink prej pri starih članicah unije kot pri vključujočih se državah.
Jaz mislim, da se ta zadeva, potem ko dejansko enkrat pride do te možnosti dostopa, se potem mačkem drugače polarizira. Tudi vprašanje je, kaj imajo različni segmenti prebivalstva od tovršnega vstopa. Vsekakor se lahko pričakuje, recimo, da bi se mladi ali pa mlajši ali pa bolj izobraženi lažje videli v tem kontekstu in bi jim to sproščanje menja omogočilo lažje si zamisliti, kakšno prihodno znotraj Evrope. Tako da mislim, da ta zadeva sama po sebi ni problematična. Bolj problematično se mi zdi odnos, bom rekel, prebivalcev obstoječih držav članic do novih kandidatk. Ta je bolj problematičen kot v samih kandidatkah. Mislim, da se skoraj ne more zgoditi, da bi na referendumu kjerkoli na koncu padu na strani same kandidatke referendum zaradi nepodpore ljudi.
V kakšnem smislu je problematičen odnos starih članic do novih, koji ste jih omenjali?
Ja, v bistvu pogledajte, ne, na eni strani je čisto splošno vprašanje vstopa Turčije, ki je grozno veliko vprašanje oziroma se ga uporablja za politične namene s tem, da se Turčijo če ni česar drugega, po malem odriva, glede na to, kako dolgo je pravzaprav že kandidatka. Na drugi strani pa v bistvu dobro to bomo pa potem tudi recimo mi sami neke izkušnje z vstopanjem Hrvaške in potencijalno preverbo teh zadev na referendumu. Sicer to ne je bilo prvič, ne? Nekaj podobnega so Francozi naredili v Veliki Britaniji, ampak to je bil čist drug čas in čist, bom rekel, drugačne okoliščine, v katerih se je v bistvu razporejala moč znotraj samega Zahoda. Mislim, da je, bom rekel, to vrstno odločanje, ko čustva prevladajo nad racionalnimi argumenti, problematično. Referendum bo treba peljati za kakšne pomembnejše stvari, tudi na ravni cele Evrope.
Skeptično, neskeptična, do euroskepticizma sta bila Igor in Nejc ob asistenci Mikrota, Valerije in Roka.
Sporočil bi bilo v tem primeru več. Načela demokracije je to zagotovo dokaz. Skratka, to je za nas slabo.
You have called before you 13 members of this parliament to face disciplinary action.
Et ne faites pas une histoire d'état parce qu'il y a 50 débiles mentaux.
Z nami govori evropska poslanka iz Slovenije, Ljudmila Novak.
A los valores que compartimos todos los europeos.
When we became members in 1995, we were told that vodka will have a tight definition, just like rum, just like whiskey.
Io ho detto con ironia.
Oddaje EP Interaktivno podpira Evropski parlament. Projekt poteka pod vodstvom Radija Študent. Pro et contra.